This time of year brings us two things, graduations and Father's Day. And the gifts that go along with them. Before you buy your dad another tie or the grad a balloon that will probably float away, ask yourself this. Does my dad or grad like wings or sports or better yet, both? If the answer is yes, then get them a Buffalo Wild Wings gift card. Right now, if you purchase $30 worth or more in-store or online, they'll give you a $5 bonus to keep for yourself. That's a gift that gives back. How generous of you. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings. Beer. Sports. Terms and conditions apply.
Jesse is a friend. Yeah, I know he's been a good friend of mine.
Jesse Rogers. Getting ready for a trip from Pittsburgh to Detroit. What a lucky guy. He joins Carmen and Yurko now. Hoodies in for Yurko. All this week, I think until Friday, right? You doing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, right?
To Thursday, yeah.
All right, I love it.
Vacation.
The throws in.
Thursday at 2:30.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
A little vacation time to wrap the summer. All right, Jesse joins us now on our guest hotline. He's brought to you by the fine folks at Continental Toyota. Visit them online, ContinentalToyota.com, or in person in their beautiful showroom just north of the Stevenson off of LaGrange Road. Jesse is at ESPN Shy Cubs on Twitter. Do you want to start with the anemic offense or you? Let's recap the weekend. I mean, I saw your tweet yesterday and I went, wow. First team in the live ball era to ever go four consecutive games scoring just a solo just one run and a solo home run. That is pathetic, Jesse.
Yeah, and combined for the series, it was the lowest scoring four-game series since 1958.
So wow.
It's not like the Pirates did much better. But this is the way we're going, it seems like. You know, I was looking at the rest of the league, and you know, Scott Miller from Bleacher Report had a whole thing on this today. We've seen these reports periodically, all home runs and walks and base and strikeouts. That's basically what's happened here, right?
Yeah.
And the league keeps going that way, and the Cubs are part of that. So are the Phillies. So are the Arizona Diamondbacks. So are plenty of teams that are contending. So we almost have to look at this as the new normal. I don't know if it's going to change. I don't know if this is what it's always going to be. But it's been a weird season. It's been a weird season, especially for a team that's 20 over 500 like the Cubs. But you have to look at them as sort of the best of this group of contenders that all have flaws.
Can you take us through what happened in which inning was it? The 11th? When did Russell get picked off? Would that have been the top of the 11th, right? Yeah. Can you take us through what happened there? I mean, at first and third, it looked like, righty up. I mean, it looked like a squeeze situation. Is that what was on? Was he anticipating it? And the Pirates kind of caught him because it almost looked like a pitch out, like they were anticipating a squeeze play there. Is that exactly what happened?
Oh yeah. You know, Wilson Contreras squared around on the first pitch, so you know they gave it away in a sense. But he's been struggling so much. I understand why Joe tried it again a couple pitches later, and yeah, they sniffed it out completely. Russell got caught a little bit in no man's land. I still think
is that
it's on
Russell?
Him.
Is that on Russell?
I think so.
Yeah.
Joe let him off the hook.
Okay.
Joe said that was just simply a great play by the Pirates, and it was. But I think you see the catcher set up outside.
Yeah.
I mean, let me ask you this. If Javi Baez is there, do you think he gets picked off? I bet he doesn't. I think it takes a very in-tune guy to see where that pitch is going, where the catcher's setting up, and you know, sort of halt his motion and get back. You know, halt his forward progress and get back. Look, he got picked off on a pitch out at third base. How can it not be his fault, partly, right?
Yeah,
so
I
think it is, and you know, this kind of plays into sort of the reputation he's developed, whether it's true or not, that Russell has kind of missed out on some instinctual moments, especially this season. You know, he's gone; it's gone against him. Where a guy like Baez, for whatever reason, it's gone forward. Now, maybe that will change, but I think most people watching the game would say instinctually, Baez and Russell are on different class of players. You know,
yes.
Jesse Rogers on Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Jesse, I thought that Quintana's performance was somewhat different yesterday because I thought he was a little bit more deliberate, a little bit more American League, in which he would just take his time between pitches, but you got the same results, though. What'd you think of Quintana's performance overall?
I think that's exactly the good Quintana, the guy that's going to get some easy innings, roll through some things, but once you get through that to that third time through the order, he seems to – that definitely seems to apply to him, that kind of cliche, like he can't make it through three times. Right around that fifth or sixth inning, he seems to falter. And again, is that just the way the game's gone with the analytics and figuring him out? Because I feel like he was eating up more innings in the American League with the White Sox. Mm-hmm. That has not been the case here, but at least he didn't blow up early, which he had done the previous two starts. So I give him credit. He bounced back. It was a solid effort. But it doesn't feel like he's a 7, 8, 9-inning pitcher. But then again, who is these days, right? Part of that report I mentioned, 10 complete games in the National League this year. So if we're expecting Jose Quintana to have one, don't. You know, maybe a Lester, maybe a Hamels. So I would say that's about as good as you're going to get out of Quintana these days. Maybe he gets through six and you're happy with it. But think about him in a playoff setting, Jonathan Hood. There is no way Joe's going to let him see the third time through the order. I don't care if there's nobody on, nobody out, and he's been rolling. I don't think there's any chance. So, again, this is the new normal for a guy like Jose Quintana. You get five and a third good ones out of him, you'd be happy, and that's what we got.
Yeah, he's the best long man starter in the National League.
There's a lot of those guys, though, now.
It's brutal. I want to ask you about the home plate rule, because I tweeted about this yesterday watching the game. Jesse, we have seen this not just in Cub games, but across the Major League Baseball landscape, in which it's gone the other way. Contreras at the plate puts the leg out there, even though he has control of the ball, and it's the runner is called out in that spot. Well, we've seen it go the other way. I'm just thinking that, as I mentioned to Cap and Jordan, I don't want the National Football League in my baseball. Whatever that rule is, it should be consistent, because we've seen it go the other way where there's no path for the runner, so the runner is safe. So how'd you see that play?
Okay, so I'm as confused as anybody about the rule in general, but the way I saw that play is once Contreras had the ball, he can do whatever he wants.
Right.
And maybe sticking the leg out was a little, you know, that sticking the leg out probably has nothing to do with the collision rule. It's just, is that a legal thing to do? Can you stick the leg out like that? I don't know. But once he has the ball, he can go wherever he wants with it, to block the runner, to tag the runner. And that's why their collisions are still allowed. If he has the ball and the runner comes straight in towards the plate and runs the catcher over, that is legal. That is legal. You just can't run the catcher over without the ball, and you can't block the path without the ball.
Right.
But once he has the ball, I think everything he did was legal in terms of the rule you're talking about, Jonathan. I just don't know if there's something else involved when you stick out your leg. But then again, they reviewed it and said that was fine as well. So, I mean, think about a guy sticking out his leg at a base. I think it would be probably a little bit more, you know, looked upon negatively. But maybe with a catcher in a bang-bang moment, you can do whatever you want at that point. But that's my ultimate point. Once you have the ball, you can pretty much do what you want to the runner. He should be out, and luckily he was out, you know?
On to you, Darvish. Every time he tries to ramp it up here, something happens. Maybe he'll be vindicated in all this. Not that that would be good for the Cubs, because that would mean another Tommy John surgery, and that would mean he'd probably miss all of 2019, too. But I guess he'd personally feel a little vindicated. Maybe there is something very seriously wrong with him. But, I mean, at this point, Jess, after yesterday, to think he's going to pitch in 2018 is a pipe dream, right?
Yeah, I think we said it, and Theo said it just last week. He said, based on the calendar, if he has a setback, you could pretty much kiss this season goodbye.
Yeah.
And what else was yesterday but a setback, unless it's something completely different? It was just a feeling, and it's gone. You know what I mean? I mean, who knows for sure? He's going to get the MRI, but it sounded like it was everything that's been going on just came out again, the pain in the elbow. Maybe the MRI will show something. I mean, I am not going to... Look, I'm a reporter, so I am not going to speculate on this part of it, that he's not hurt and he just doesn't want to pitch. Come on. That's just I'm not going to believe that. I've never been around a player that doesn't want to play the game if he's healthy. So, look, he got all the way to a rehab start, and, boy, that's real calculated if in that moment after one inning he decided – oh, I'm hurting, I'm going to sit out. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I don't think he's faking it either.
Talk show Jesse would say it.
Nah, I don't know.
Talk show Jesse would definitely be, this guy's soft. How come he can't get a third MRI? How ridiculous is this? Back after this.
Look, that is probably true, but here's the thing. questioning the pain threshold that he can pitch through, we can do that on the talk show, because we don't know what he's, I mean, who can get inside his body and know what he's feeling?
Right.
But here's the thing, when the MRI comes back and there's no structural damage, that's where you can jump to that. Well, why can't he pitch through the pain? You know, you can do that if you want.
Like, and again,
doesn't mean you're right. Doesn't mean we're right, but we can do it.
I think that's accurate. I don't think Yu Darvish is faking it.
No.
I think
right.
if they keep coming, if these MRIs keep coming back clean, I think then you start to wonder, okay, he's not faking it, but what's happening? What's preventing right. him truly from going out there and grinding through it? And maybe he will be totally vindicated in all of it because there is something bad happening in that elbow. I don't know why it would take three times to see it. I mean, I could see missing it the first time, but who knows? Any way you slice it, it's just not good for the Cubs.
No, it's not. I said this earlier. It's just, you know, you're rolling the dice, picking up two players that pitched into Game 7 of the World Series. I kind of said it at the time, but I'm this is in hindsight. There's no doubt. I mean, Morrow and Darvish both have been out for extended periods of time. I was around John Lester last year. I mentioned to Cap. I mean, physically, he was not the same guy. So why would we think Morrow and especially Darvish, in a little bit of an older age, pitching as a starter, stressful innings. You talk about stressful innings. He went from Texas to L.A., pennant stretch, you know, NLCS, beats the Cubs, World Series, Game 7. You know, it's not a surprise to me that both guys are down. I'm sorry. I saw the pitchers on the Cubs last season. Physically, they weren't the same. So to give them that money and to sign them both, I mean, it was a risky proposition, and they're getting very little out of both of them. Maybe obviously a little bit more out of Morrow, and we still might see him again. But it's just been a wash of a year. There's no doubt. Maybe the last 5 years of the contract will pay off because he's a year removed from pitching in the World Series, and he's pretty much been rested all year. If the elbow is healed, of course, next season. But right now, year one was a wash. That's a fact. That's not even an opinion, obviously.
Yeah.
So do you foresee Chris Bryant playing in September, Jesse?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I wouldn't be surprised if it was September 1st. That's the easy day to manipulate your roster. You don't have to send Bodie down and get everybody mad, and you give him full time to heal. I could absolutely see it being right around September 1st. You bring up some help in the pitching staff. You keep Bodie, you keep everybody, you add Bryant. And maybe September is what August is supposed to be. But if they don't get their act together offensively, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. This is surprising to Joe because it's not like they were playing so poorly in the first half and continued it. They had a good offense in the first half going. They were leading the league in opposite field hits. You, Carmen, you know, I've been saying this forever. And they were scoring in different ways. And then all of a sudden, it just stopped. It stopped. And, again, maybe the rest of the league is the same. Maybe everybody is up and down, up and down, up and down. And that's why no one's pulled away. I know the Phillies with John Mailey are having their issues stringing together run scoring in games. So, maybe the Cubs are the best of these mediocre contenders. I don't know. But right now, that offense looks like a shell of itself. It really does.
Yeah.
Not walking, not going to the opposite field, a home run here and there. But the last thing, going back to what I've said, Central Division pitching is underrated. Now, they'll probably beat up on Detroit, and maybe that's the way to the path to the division title, guys. Maybe it's beat up on everyone else, go 500 against this division, because there is parity here. There is. As much as we think the Cubs should be better, they're not right now that much better than these teams behind them. So you got to win when you can, and here's a couple that they certainly can win in Detroit.
Cub fans who just do what Sox fans do when the offense is no good, just blame Greg Walker.
Well, I mean, that's the easy out.
Always.
That's the easy out, you know.
Just blame Greg Walker.
I mean, the life of a hitting coach is a tough one. John Mailey led a team to the playoffs, great offense, gets fired. Chili Davis, you know, they're first, but he's still getting much maligned. They're first in a lot of categories, first in the standings, too, and he's getting maligned. That's just Jim Hickey's getting maligned. You know, just think if they weren't in first place, how much heat these guys would be getting. So, you know, that's why you get paid a lot to do these jobs, right?
All right, Jess, we'll talk to you from Detroit. Thank you.
You got it, guys. Take care. See ya.
That's Jesse Rogers at ESPN Shy Cubs on Twitter. Nevin's Brewing Company is quickly becoming the coolest summer hangout in the burbs. Exciting live music every weekend. Join them Tuesday night for free and fun bar bingo. Win great prizes and play for a chance to win a jackpot valued at up to 10 grand. Wednesday and Sunday's trivia night. It's also free to play. Great food and beer specials all night long. And don't forget, their beer garden is the place to be every Thursday night with live music. Order your pup a treat from their new Yappy Hour menu on the dog-friendly patio. Why, something for everyone. Call them today at 815-436-3900 or reserve your table by visiting nevinsbrewing.com.
Cubs are still the best in the NBA Eastern Conference.
That's exactly what it is right now.
Right now.
Good call.
No matter what, Carver, still at the top of the heap of the National League, but what does that get you, really?
I don't know. Some trending coming up next. Kevin Fishbane to talk Bears with us at 1. Leonard Floyd did have a broken hand. He had surgery yesterday, but they think he'll be ready to go with a club or a protected device week 1 Sunday night in Green Bay, coming up in a few weeks. Chuck Garfine at 1:30 on the Kopech call-up. Hoodies in for Yerk. It's Carmen and Yerko on ESPN 1000.
Waddle and Sylvie coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Lots to get to today. A full recap of Bears and Broncos. What did you like from Mitchell Trubisky? What did you not like so much? We'll dive into all of that. Plus, Jesse Rogers joins us to recap the weekend in Pittsburgh. We'll go through the good, the bad, and the dirty of what you saw this weekend. Mark Giagreco will stop by at 5:30. And, of course, I'll take you inside Waddle's world. We get started at 1:45. Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
See Waddle 1 hour from now for Crosstalk. Hoodie is in for Yerk this week. Hope you're having a great day.
Just Waddle?
I don't know who's with Waddle. Sylvie's got one more day vacation, so I'm not sure who's doing the show.
Sounds
today.
Like Waddle.
Oh, okay.
It might just be Tommy.
Okay.
They'll do the three-man weave. They'll do Waddle, Meller, and Abdallah.
Yes.
He's never alone. Back from vacation, I believe.
Never alone.
No. Northwestern Football is the proud sponsor of Trending on the Carmen and Yerko show. Coach Fitz and the Music City Bowl champs host a great slate of Big Ten action mm-hmm. in Evanston this year, right? We were talking about this. Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, and Illinois.
Well, most of that's pretty good.
Most of it's pretty good, Hoodie. 80% of that.
ILL.
ILL.
LOC.
80% of that is pretty damn good. Single game tickets are on sale now at NU Sports.
That's a hell of a way to sell it, pal.
Right?
That's selling it right there.
80% is pretty damn good. All right? Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, and Notre Dame is pretty damn good.
What about Illinois? What's
trending, Chris Black?
Well, okay, let's start right there with college football. The AP Top 25 for the preseason came out today. Yeah. Alabama's number 1, Clemson 2, Georgia 3.
Sick 'em.
But these dogs, number 3.
Wisconsin, number 4, and Ohio State, number 5.
Number 4, hi, it's Merkin. Hi, it's Merkin. Yeah,
yeah. So excited. Yeah.
Well, you know what? The Wisconsin pick is because you don't know what's happening with Urban Meyer. That might be the difference between winning the Big Ten and not, you know.
And they've got the easier road in that division, don't they?
Oh, super easy schedule.
I mean,
for
they've
Wisconsin.
Got an easy schedule. Yeah. Wisconsin's going to be good. So you got 1, 2, 3, 4 Big Ten teams in the top 11. Penn State's 10th and Michigan State's 11.
Don't
not
get
bad.
Black started on the Wisconsin schedule.
Oh, yeah.
It's easy.
It's easy. Let's go to
like Notre Dame's is brutal. Northwestern's is brutal. They got an easy one.
Where's the closest bakery? I think we can get some cupcakes, no?
Oh, see?
Notre Dame is 12th.
Yes, so. Notre Dame is 12th. And Notre Dame's got a brutal schedule, man. I'm telling you.
I think they're going to be better than you think.
They have 5 top 25 preseason top 25s on their schedule.
Right here on the home of the
and
Irish
Northwestern.
ESPN 1000.
That's right. All right, what else?
You guys were talking about it just a little bit ago, and we heard Matt Nagy on the station during his press conference say Leonard Floyd had surgery on his right hand yesterday, but they're not expecting him to miss the opener. He'll have a club or some kind of thing on his hand.
Something on that hand. That's good. I mean, look, it's bad, but it could have been worse. He'll have that kind of club.
The club on his hand. Yeah. Is it all over?
It'll have like flashing lights on it. Very cool.
Big disco ball comes over his head when it goes down. I got the club on my hand. Everybody come to my hand if you pardon the expression.
Oh, what else, Chris?
Lots of Chicago sports trending. Yu Darvish yesterday leaves the rehab start.
Not
after
good.
One inning, what do you guys think of that?
I think he's obviously done for this year, and they've got to get to the bottom of what's really wrong. I mean, I don't think Yu Darvish is faking it. They've got to figure out what's causing that pain. And maybe the third MRI shows something that would be their worst fear, and that's that he's got to have another Tommy John, because that would probably, at this point, wipe out next year, too. So,
yeah, you know, he wanted to walk away from baseball before. Remember that piece from the L.A. Times?
I think the L.A. Times did it. I'm
LA
pretty
Times?
Sure. Or L.A. Live. Somebody out there that I can't remember exactly where. But
I just know Wallen and Sylvie had the guest on, the writer from them. And in just the deep dive into Darvish's psyche, how he's kind of sheepish on Cubs fans because he doesn't think the Cubs fans are behind him because he's been on the DL so long. He's going to walk away after last year. He might walk away after this. All I'm telling you right now is that Yu Darvish is not exactly what the Cubs and Cub fans wanted. $126 million.
Not right now.
I mean, it's just not. And I saw, you see some of the clips from South Bend. I saw a couple of clips. Those pitchers were nowhere near the strike zone at times. It didn't look like a Major League Baseball pitcher.
Not good.
That's what I'm saying.
All right. Anything else?
And congratulations to the both of you. White Sox fans, you get Michael Kopech tomorrow.
Yes, very exciting.
All right. How about that? About
Sox congrats, guys.
I want to play Rick Hahn. I'm very excited.
Come on.
I mean,
it's
a good reason to watch Sox tomorrow night.
Sockos. There we go.
Don't call up Eli, though. Wait. Just wait. Play the control game now.
Why are you so concerned about the draft?
I'm not that. I'm concerned about an extra year of Eloy Jimenez. Sorry. Call me crazy. I'm concerned about making sure you have him for 7 years instead of six.
I'm with you, Carm.
I think you'd be nuts. And you don't see this kind of manipulation with pitchers much. Pitchers tend to get hurt anyway. Sometimes they take team-friendly deals because they know they can get hurt. Plus, they're building towards the requisite amount of innings that they want to get him, his arm used to going into next year. You don't see this much with pitchers. To me, it'd be crazy to waste a year of Eloy Jimenez. And if you bring him up now, you've got to wait longer next year. You might as well wait and call him up on April 15th next year.
I'm just anxious and itchy to see some of these kids.
I am too. That's all. You get to see Kopech. And I want to play, coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll play Rick Hahn on why they decided now's a good time for Kopech. We're also going to talk to Kevin Fishbane from The Athletic on the Bears coming up next, and Chuck Garfine at 1:30 to talk Sox and Kopech. Chicago Blackhawk hockey is almost back, and the UC seats are ready to be occupied. Purchase tickets to see the Hawks this fall as they host their first game at home against an original six matchup hoodie, the Toronto Maple Leafs.
That's worth going to.
Packed, right? Absolutely. Yeah, the schedule is packed with friendly rivalries, both in and out of the division. Weeknight and weekend games alike, something for everybody. So come see Taves and Canes skate with the newcomers, bound to be lifelong favorites as they take on challengers throughout the National Hockey League. Regular season single game tickets are on sale now. Visit ChicagoBlackhawks.com to buy your tickets.
I'm not going to grab my hand.
Fishbane next on the Bears on ESPN 1000.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.
94, so Floyd ended up, he has a fracture in his right hand. So he's he had surgery yesterday. That surgery went well. And, we're staying optimistic for Green Bay. Index finger and the middle finger.
So was that something where he might be able to play through it, or are you hoping it's healed?
No, I don't think it's going to be healed. I think he's going to have to end up playing through it. You know, it might require something in regards to, having a cast or a club-type deal.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN Chicago.
That's head coach Matt Nagy about an hour ago announcing that, yes, indeed, Leonard Floyd broke bone in his hand on Saturday. Had to have surgery yesterday, but they're not ruling him out for Green Bay just under 3 weeks from now. So that's good. Kicking off hour number two, the 1 o'clock hour here. It's Carmen and Yurko. Yurk's off this week. Jonathan Hood is sitting in. Out to our guest line to talk Bears and NFL with Kevin Fishbane. He does a great job covering the Bears for The Athletic Chicago. He joins us now on ESPN 1000. And Kevin, thank you for the time. And look, it's not great news, but it certainly could have been a lot worse. I mean, it sounds like they believe just club it up or cast it up or something, and Leonard Floyd's going to be able to play in 3 weeks, right?
Yeah, it's almost like Matt Nagy and then those of us frantically tweeting from House Hall kind of buried the lead that he's optimistic Floyd will play in week one, and that's all that matters. He'll be limited a little bit by the club or the cast, and he'll have to get used to it. There's a guy, too. I mean, Leonard has worked on his inside moves and trying to use bull rushes more often, but he's still a speed guy. He's still the guy who is at his best when he's getting around pass rushers, and, he can probably still do that with something on his hand. So it seems like this was, a better outcome than maybe we thought when the injury happened on Saturday night, because with Leonard, with all the guys that are banged up, at this point it's just all about, okay, can he play in week one? And if Leonard can, then that's okay for your pass rush. It's not the best situation because he's still going to have something on his hand, but they seem to think he'll be okay.
Kevin, what is your letter grade for Mitch Trubisky, the way he played in the last game against Denver?
Yeah, I guess I'd probably go in the B range, Jonathan. I liked the second drive, certainly the scoring drive. It seemed like Matt Nagy pinned the interception on Tariq Cohen. And how about that, guys, too? I mean, after the game, kind of saying the running back made the mistake. That was more player criticism in that one sentence than we got in 3 years of the last head coach. I think Mitch has been comfortable. There's certain, it's kind of, we're still all trying to get used to this offense and how he's going to run it. I would like to see some more accuracy on the deep ball in games. We've seen it all in Bourbonnais and in practice. That is something that Mitch Trubisky can do, is throw a good deep ball. And through his two preseason games, it seems to be a little bit off, whether that's a pass rush, whether that's just the play at hand. But I think he's been fine. We'll learn a little bit more next Saturday here against Kansas City. But I think it's been a little bit above average.
I think that'd be my only criticism right now, too, Kevin. Just the deep ball has not been very accurate. You know, the first throw in Cincinnati, the one out of the back of the end zone, you never given anybody a chance with that one. I thought the one to Kevin White was a little bit underthrown. Other than that, I mean, there. You know, you're seeing the athleticism. There have been some good signs. I also liked just the formations, the personnel groupings and formations. And obviously, they're not going to completely show their hand on what they're going to bust out for Green Bay in the regular season. But you can already see kind of like the creative juices working in Matt Nagy's mind in these first two preseason games.
Yeah, Carmen. I mean, it's certainly been a lot of fun compared to what we've watched the past few years with this offense. And low bar, but still. And the motions pre-snap, seeing Anthony Miller, Tariq Cohen kind of faking jet sweeps, the different things they did to get Trey Burton open, I thought was kind of cool, the creativity that you saw there. And you're right, we're not really seeing the half of it. Remember, we haven't seen Taylor Gabriel yet with this offense in the preseason game. Al Robinson hasn't gotten a target. He's obviously going to be a major focal point. And I imagine they are keeping a ton of Tariq Cohen plays under wraps this preseason. And that's what Dow Loggins did last summer, too. So we're going to see more and more of that, you know, starting next month and in the regular season. But, yeah, you're seeing one of the things that Mitch said last week is this offense gives you a lot of answers. And that's not just the fact that he's got more weapons, but there's so many options within plays that he can see something pre-snap or he can make a check, or receivers or tight ends within the routes can make adjustments too. That the idea is Matt Nagy is giving Mitch Trubisky a lot of different responses to what defenses are going to throw at them. And early on, guys, defenses aren't going to really know exactly what to get. I mean, it's probably a good thing the Bears are getting that game in Lambeau in week one, because the Packers defense, I mean, there's just going to be so much unknown in what to expect from this Bears offense.
Kevin, when you look at Jordan Howard, how do you look at him versus other running backs, say even in the NFC? Do you find him to be a special running back or someone that can really make a difference for this offense versus Trubisky's arm?
Yeah, there's certain things that I would say Jordan Howard is special at. I think his patience is pretty outstanding when he gets kind of into the open field and he lets blocks develop in front of him. Certainly we've seen Jordan at his best late in games and trying to run out the clock when the Bears have had a lead. Didn't happen too often his first 2 years, but he's good at that. You know, I think that the overtime game against Baltimore last year was a great example of how good he gets late in games when he can really wear down defenses. And there's not a ton of running backs in the league that can do that. He's being used on third down more. They threw him the ball a lot in Bourbonnais because they really want him to at least be able to do that at a competent level. He doesn't have to be good at it. He just has to be competent if they need him to be that guy, because otherwise when he's on the field, that's not much of a decoy if he's not even going to be a threat. But certainly there's a lot more guys in this league that can do more than Jordan Howard, but I think the way that he is in terms of being an inside runner, he's still probably one of the best guys at that. And I think it just brings a nice element to this offense when you talk about so much of this offense is moving horizontally, whether it's Mitch Trubisky, whether it's Tariq Cohen, Anthony Miller, these guys that can, you know, adjust the field right to left. And then having Jordan Howard to really slam the ball up the middle just gives them something that's going to be unique and a type of guy. If this Bears team is as good at scoring points as they're hoping, they might actually have a couple of leads in the fourth quarter, and that's when you'll really see the benefit of having a guy like Jordan Howard.
Talking Bears with Kevin Fishbane from The Athletic Chicago, Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Yurk's off this week, Jonathan Hood sitting in. So knowing that in that final preseason game, the starters probably won't play at all if they do maybe a series, how important is this Saturday afternoon for Roquan Smith, and how much do you think we'll see him in that game since he missed so much time, Kev?
Yeah, it's important to just get some live tackles in. One of the ironic parts about Roquan Smith's holdout was in May, Matt Nagy was telling us about Roquan Smith, and because we obviously had a lot of questions about him in the OTAs. And Matt Nagy at one point, I'd say, look, guys, you're really not going to get a good glimpse of what he can do until training camp. And then, of course, he didn't show up to training camp. So we're still really waiting to see that what we saw at Georgia and then how that can transition to this defense. I would expect him to get whatever the starters get, you know, maybe one extra series just to get him those extra reps. So maybe into the first series, the second half would make sense to me. And then, yeah, don't play him against the Bills and figure out a way to use him against Buffalo. I think Vic Fangio's got – Vic would ideally love it if Roquan had been here the whole time, but he's got three good inside linebackers that he can rotate at least early on until they're comfortable having Roquan being every down guy, whether it's Roquan Smith on the passing downs, got a little bit more speed than Nick Kwiatkowski, kind of rotating them that way. Certainly the questions at outside linebacker give you, maybe we'll see three inside linebackers on the field at the same time. We'll see those guys blitzing more often. Yeah. They're going to need to be flexible there with those guys. And yeah, I think it's going to be important for Roquan to get those reps in so many different ways, in coverage, in run stopping, in pass rushing, just to get him those hits so it's not a first-time thing on September 9th at Lambeau.
Kevin, as your eyes glaze over in the fourth quarter after watching some of this preseason action, is there any last chance you candidates for the Bears that you saw that maybe can make the ball club?
Well, John Franklin is the last chance you've got.
That's right.
On the roster. I'm looking at the defensive backfield, Kevin Tolliver and Michael Joseph, the two undrafted rookie corners, completely different pedigrees. Obviously, Joseph went to Dubuque and Tolliver went to LSU, where he's one of the highest recruited guys in the country. And they're very different body types and play differently. But that's a position where you could use some depth for sure. And those are guys that I thought have shown a lot of flashes in Bourbonnais. I would want to see more out of them in terms of game experience. I think Tolliver played the most snaps for them on Saturday night in Denver, so they got a lot of tape on him. It's a weird thing, guys, because this is still not that good or deep of a team, but there aren't that many great roster battles or position battles that you look at that we've seen with Bears teams in the past, because they haven't had as many good quality players in the recent years that you've had to find some of those undrafted rookies just to get on the roster. I'd keep an eye on the outside linebacker spot. You know, so one of these guys, Isaiah Irving, Kylie Fitz, Elijah Norris is an undrafted guy. He didn't play Saturday night, but does one of these guys step up a little bit and earn some more reps when it comes time for game action? Or is that a position, guys, that on September 2nd, the Bears are claiming somebody off waivers who ends up being a key player for this team? Now, if you're getting somebody on September 2nd, there's a reason he's available. But outside linebacker is kind of still that position that we need to watch to see who these guys can help out the pass rush.
And speaking of undrafted guys and the last chance guys, I mean, you see stories like this all across the league, every single team. I mean, Roy Robertson-Harris is going from maybe he's got a shot to stick. Like when you watched him last year, Kevin, now he had another good game, I thought, Saturday. Like there's potential impact pass rush skill there, isn't there?
There is, Carmen, and it's unique pass rush skill, right? It's a guy who is 6'7" on the defensive line at 295 and just with tons of strength and power. I mean, he's putting offensive linemen on skates when he pushes them back. And it really gives them a nice element in there with Akeem Hicks and Eddie Goldman and Jonathan Bullard, because all four of those guys do different things. And what's amazing about Robertson-Harris, remember, he was an edge-rushing guy, an outside linebacker when he first got here. He missed an entire rookie season due to an illness. He was good last summer. I actually looked it up. 1 year ago today, we were all writing about Roy Robertson-Harris's big game in Arizona in the preseason, and then he didn't do it much in the regular season. But now, better understand his defense. You don't have Mitch on Ryan there, so you need guys that are going to be able to step in. He's got 6 quarterback hits and 3 or 3.5 sacks already to lead the team by a wide margin. So it's been really encouraging to see what he can do, just because there's just not a whole lot of guys built like him who can rush the passer the way he can.
I'll flip it on you and talk about the Denver Broncos with you. One of the frustrations in Denver is that they're not sure if Paxton Lynch is the guy, and maybe it's Keenum, maybe it's Chad Kelly. So, Denver fans, when I'm doing these national shows, they're just not happy at all with Paxton Lynch. They don't think that
third string.
Just brutal. They just don't think so. What stood out about the defense against Denver's offense to you in that game, Kevin? Because I thought the odd flea flicker play so early in the game, I thought there was a little bit of an interesting play call there.
Yeah, it was. And there was a screenplay, too, that Denver tried to run. The Bears were all over, which kind of reminds you that the fact that you have so many guys who are in the third year of the system, not a whole lot fools them. But I thought they looked okay. You know, I know the Broncos had a really bad first preseason game in terms of the first-team offense, so I think they were putting a little bit more. Actually, the Bears were, too. It was kind of a similar spot. I imagine the Broncos were putting a lot of gameplay into that first series to give those guys some confidence because they had a rough start in their preseason opener. I tell you what, though, Swag Kelly certainly looks the part over there. And being in Denver for a couple days and talking to the Broncos reporters, they're really excited about Kelly, way more so than Paxton Lynch. So that was it's funny because we all tweeted out and wrote about what John Elway said about Mitch Trubisky last week. I got a lot of responses saying, I'm not sure how much I trust John Elway's thoughts on these rookie quarterbacks or young quarterbacks after the whole Paxton Lynch debacle. Yeah.
Kevin, real quick before we let you go, 17 days until the season officially gets underway for 2018. Any chance between now and then the league writes language in that allows the officials to go back and review this lowering the helmet flag issue? Because what happened to Kyle Fuller, like that, brutal. I'm sorry, but it's not going to be able to happen at a game. It's going to cost somebody a game, and that was an absolute joke.
Yeah, Carm, the problem with that is you're counting on the league and the officials to have any kind of wherewithal and any kind of foresight to do something like that. And I just haven't seen any examples of them being willing to do that. My hope is that they are overcalling this right now and that they're going to sit down and figure it out, and they might kind of dial it back when the regular season gets going. But I don't know if they can write that in before the season starts. I would love to see them replay it. They can do it so quickly, but that might be something, unfortunately, for 2019. Right. At this point, I think the best hope is that they're just not going to call it as often when the regular season gets underway.
Let's hope. He is at K Fishbane on Twitter. Make sure you follow him, read his stuff at the Athletic Chicago. Kevin, thanks, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care, guys.
See ya. That's Kevin Fishbane. The one on Fuller. I didn't even think the one on the Bronco,
no,
to be honest, was... And that was the rookie, I think, that it was all that bad. I mean, even he looked like he was trying to get his shoulder in there to make the tackle. But the one on Fuller, if anything, they're supposed to call this both ways. That's never going to happen. They're not going to call it on the offense. That should have been a flag on the offensive player, right, not on Kyle Fuller. That was a joke.
You hear people complaining about how long baseball games are. It just said it's an eternity with all of the replays and all that. You know, no one ever complains about the National Football League, and they should. We're going to start seeing 3 and 3.5 hour games. We already see 3 hour games. We're going to see 3.5 hour games because of all these penalties. Look how long the game took with the Bears and Broncos because of these plays. That is, those plays, if you are trying to be able to get in as a defender, and you are trying to lower your shoulder into a defender, it's not the helmet all the time.
I mean, yeah, your head's going to go down.
It's going to go down.
I don't know what I mean. I don't understand it.
If the NFL wanted the Arena League, then they're going to get it because it's all about offense. And by the way, if you want the Arena League, it's a failure. Clearly, everybody doesn't want all offense. You want some defense in your NFL too.
I don't know. I don't want
so brutal.
It's crazy, man. I mean, and I'm not trying to go on meathead and be like, you're ruining the game or you're wussifying the game.
We're not asking for Doug Plank. We're just asking for defenders to have a chance.
But a defender has got to be able to make a play with his shoulder, a physical play, and not worry about, am I going to get flagged right now? Am I going to get a penalty that's going to cost my team 15 yards? That's going to keep my defense on the field? You cannot tell these players that. I what is the real message? Yes, safety is important, and they should be careful. And guys should know not to put their head down the way Ryan Shazier did last year.
Right.
You know, but, I mean, come on. You cannot be calling some of these flags that we've seen in this preseason in the regular season. And maybe Kevin's right that they're cataloging all this right now, and they're going to show it to the officials in the next 3 weeks and say, no, that's garbage, don't do that. And they're just trying to work through it now, and it all gets rectified and it gets fixed when it's for real. But that's going to cost somebody a game, and that's brutal.
Absolutely.
And Kyle Fuller did everything right on that play and got a 15-yard penalty. That can't happen.
Well, here's what's going to happen is that you're going to start seeing these officials call it anyway because they're so afraid. Replay is a thing that is a scary thing for umpires and referees because they're all evaluated, Carmen. They're all evaluated, so they're so scared to death that, oh, if I miss this call, then I'm not going to be part of a major, you know, Super Bowl or playoff game. This is that you are the game has a lot of warts if you're going to add another one, you're going to turn off more people to the NFL with that nonsense that we saw in the preseason so far.
Let's hope they fix it. Hey, what rhymes with trampoline? Brampoline? Sparkling ice plus what? Caffeine? Well, maybe not, but sparkling ice now has caffeine and gives you enough bounce to help you get through your day. Sparkling ice plus caffeine is a sparkling water with zero sugar, bold flavor, and just the right amount of caffeine. With five deliciously fizzy flavors like blue raspberry, triple citrus, and orange passion fruit, good luck picking a favorite. Grab a sparkling ice plus caffeine today at a Bucky's convenience store near you.
I was going to say, like, Valvoline? I don't know.
What do you mean? I finally found one.
I guess.
That's the only one.
I don't know. I can't think
of
it.
Good job. Chuck Garfine, bottom of the hour. Rick Hahn on why they decided to finally call up Michael Kopech. You're going to hear it next on ESPN 1000. Ow.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN Chicago.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho.
Happy Monday to you, Carmen and Yurko. Yurko's off this week. Jonathan Hood sitting in. We're going to talk to Chuck Garfine, bottom of the hour. Big night tomorrow on the South Side. Sox and Twins, Michael Kopech will start for the first time in the bigs. Rick Hahn was on the station with Capman and Jordan Cornette earlier today. And they simply asked Rick, why was now a good time to call up Michael Kopech? Here's the GM.
It goes back to last offseason, Michael having finished the 2017 season at AAA, as we laid out what would be an ideal development plan for him in 2018. It did entail him at least getting a taste of big league action. We felt that at age 22, that would be a nice step towards ultimately becoming the pitcher that we think he's capable of being. In part because it would give him a taste of how big league hitters react to his stuff and potentially send him into the off season with the ability to make adjustments or learn from the experience and come into the 2019 season even stronger. But another important part of it was the fact that last year in 2017, he set his career high in innings at about 134. Right now, I think he sits at about 126 or so. And we felt it was important to continue to build on that number and move past his career highs and set him up with a good innings base entering 2019. So it was definitely part of the longer-term vision that Michael would make a debut at some point this year. In terms of the timing, he's been on a fantastic roll going back to about the AAA All-Star break, last seven or eight starts or so. And in those starts, we've seen an improvement in the fastball command. We've seen some minor improvements in his delivery in terms of his direction. And his secondary stuff has really picked up and become, you know, in some cases, a plus-plus offering that's eliciting a lot of swings and misses. Earlier in the season, he was putting up some gaudy strikeout numbers, which I think led to a little bit of buzz about, oh, he's ready, it's time. But he really wasn't the complete pitcher that he is or has been over the last seven or eight starts, and we felt like now was the right time to build off that and you know advance what was our long-term development plan with this player.
So there's Rick Hahn. You can get the entire interview on the podcast page at ESPNChicago.com tomorrow, and Hoodie's going to be in again for your Chris Getz, former White Sox infielder, who is their director of player development, is going to join us to talk about Kopech. We'll talk about Eloy and some of the other guys too, but I've been saying this for a while. The manipulation doesn't happen as much with pitchers. First of all, their careers are usually shorter.
Yes.
They get injured more. Sometimes they even take hometown discounts a little bit more frequently because they are worried about injury to their elbow or to their shoulder. And as Rick explained, you're getting him to a certain number of innings with next year in mind. You don't do that with a position player. Eloy doesn't need a certain number of innings. He's not building up any sort of endurance the way a pitcher is in his arm and in his shoulder. It makes sense to bring up Kopech, and I've been saying this for a while. At some point, you knew they were going to bring him up. It doesn't make sense to me to bring up Eloy Jimenez.
I understand.
You want him on your big league club through 2025. And the only way you do that without really delaying it next year is by calling him up next April 15th.
I understand. I just, I'm antsy because I want to be able to see these young guys. And seeing the Sox on the losing end is, it hurts me because the Sox are the team that means the most to me in the city. You know that.
I know.
You know the Sox. I mean, it's, and so at least we're getting a little taste by having Kopech coming up here. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he can bring to the table because at times you're watching these games, Carmen, you're just like, you're shaking your head. You're like, when the team is good, most of these bums will not be on the roster.
A lot of them won't be. It's true.
I mean, you know? And so, and the other thing I'm looking at too is when the Sox are good, whether that's 2020 or sooner, I'd like to know who's going to be leading the ball club. I know that the conventional wisdom is that Rick Renteria is going through some doldrums and he's teaching the game. Can I tell you something? If I wanted Ned Yost to manage my ball club, I would ask for him
I'd
on the air.
I'd call Ned Yost.
And what I mean by that, Crack, is this bunting with two strikes nonsense.
Ugh.
Like, even me.
The bunting's got to stop.
But this is what Renteria is. And so, especially with two strikes. Like, and here's the thing. You're bunting and sacrificing for who? For what? In that lineup. But it's not like it's the Cubs or some other team that has a lot of hairy-chested sluggers. It's not like you're bunting like, oh, well, here we go. We got somebody coming up next. You really don't. Because there's been more failure than success. That's my point. What are you bunting and sacrificing for? Let him swing away.
Terrible.
Listen, you're the numbers guy.
I hate it. You know what I think about. Bunting for a hit is fine. Sacrificing is.
With two strikes.
Those situations. I mean, swing the bat. It's crazy. Rick Renteria is not going to be the manager when they're good, though. We know that.
Well, get someone that is good. There's a guy on the MLB Network that I would take right now that could be managing the White Sox and really changing the culture.
An MLB Network that can be managing the
not
White Sox.
Not Brian Kenny.
It's not Brian Kenny?
it's not
Mark DeRosa?
No, it's not.
It's not...
Went to Northwestern.
Joe Girardi. Yeah, there you go. I'd call Joe. I would.
He won't be bunt with two strikes.
I hope not.
Margulis wrote about this on The Athletic.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw. I mean, just like... It offends my sensibilities as a baseball fan. That's all I'm saying. Like you don't play small ball when you're bad. am I right or wrong?
No, of course. Okay, I'm not. Hey, I don't disagree with you one bit.
Okay, that's all I'm saying.
All right, Chuck Garfine. We'll talk White Sox and Kopech with us coming up next. You know he's super excited about the debut tomorrow night. So we'll talk to Chuckster coming up. It's Carmen and Yurko. Hoodies in for Yurko on ESPN 1000.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.
Hoodies in for Yurk. It's Carmen and Yurko. Michael Kopech starts in the bigs for the first time tomorrow night. Chris Getz will join us tomorrow. Chuck Garfine joins us right now. You see him breaking it down pre and post and during the game on NBC Sports Chicago. He is at Chuck Garfine on Twitter. He's with Carmen and Hoodie right now. Big day tomorrow, Chuck. Fans have been waiting for this. I don't think clock manipulation is as important, or I don't think it happens with pitchers much. Rick Hahn did a good job of explaining why now is a good time to continue Michael Kopech's development at the big league level. You think it's a good move?
Yeah, I think it's a good move. You look at what he's done his last seven starts, 59 strikeouts, 4 walks. And the walks were a big problem for him in the middle of the season, and then he flipped the switch, and he's been probably the most dominant pitcher in minor league baseball for the last 5 weeks. And people talk about the clock thing, but he's been AAA all year. He's been knocking on the door all year. He is a pitcher, certainly a position player, and we can get to Eloy Jimenez if you want to. But I think this is it's the right move. It's a good move, and I'm really excited to see him pitch there tomorrow night.
What did they fix with the command issues? Because they were a problem in May and June, but he really did. You talked about just the groove he's been in lately, the last 7 to 10 starts. He flipped the switch. What happened?
Now, I can't say for sure, but what I do know is that there were a number of things that they wanted him to work on, and when you're just watching him or you're just seeing the stats and you'll see these like high walk rates, whatever it might be, he was specifically working on things, working on his changeup, his slider, his command, and you know, he just didn't have it on certain nights, and he was working through things and trying to, in a way, pretend like he was in the major leagues. They were trying to set him up as if, okay, you are now going against the Cleveland Indians. What can we do to better prepare you for the major leagues? What's not just, you know, throw your fastball at 99 miles per hour every time because you're going to wipe out all these pitchers or all these hitters. Let's prep you for the major leagues. And so they were, you know, there was the kind of checking of the boxes, so to speak, which is kind of this crazy cliche, but they wanted him to do all these things. And something tells me that when he was struggling, he was trying to do these things that the White Sox were asking, and it might have taken him some time to figure things out. And then, you can't really always say he flipped the switch, but might not have been one moment, but it's certainly somewhere along the line he got into a groove with this thing that the White Sox wanted to do, and now he's coming up.
Chuck, what is your letter grade for Tim Anderson this year?
My letter grade for Tim Anderson. If the season ended right now, I'd probably give him... that's a good question.
Yes.
It depends. If I would say probably a C or a B. And, you know, the thing is that I think we have these expectations, at least from Ivan Popek too, for these guys to be finished products when they get here. And there are those examples where guys come up here like Acuna and all these, and they are just, they seem like all-stars right from the get-go. And that hasn't happened, obviously, with Tim Anderson. He has improved from last year in terms of walks, stolen bases. I think power might eventually get there if it isn't already. His defense has gotten better, but it's not all-star caliber. But there's all this talk, oh, maybe he'll just go in the outfield. He's not going to be their full future shortstop. We don't know that because when the White Sox are ready to win, and we don't know exactly when that's going to be, they can make that call at that point. Okay, we can or we can't win with Tim Anderson as our shortstop. Well, they're not there yet, and I think he's gotten a lot better in the last, I'd say, month and a half at shortstop, but they don't have to make that call right now. But I give him there are some days I feel like he's a B or an A, and there's some days I think he's a C or a D, so I'm going B or C with Tim Anderson.
That's fair, right?
1,500 plate appearances, it's a pretty good sample. 289 on base percentage, it's just going to have to improve if he's going to be a starting everyday player when they're good, though. You can't have a guy in your lineup but below a 290 clip getting on base. You can't play in a good team that way. I'm sorry. Not as an everyday player. And maybe he can continue to improve that. But the sample's getting pretty big. And to see a 289 career on base percentage, I'm sorry, but that's not an everyday player in the big leagues. Not to me, anyway. Go ahead, Chuck. Go ahead.
What I would say about Tim, yeah, that's true. If you have really good players around him, though, that 289 on base percentage isn't going to look as bad. And I'd like to think it's going to get better. But, yes. In 2020, when this team probably should be turning the corner in a way that they might be able to contend, if you have Tim Anderson with an on-base percentage of 289, you've got to find a better shortstop. I agree.
Yeah.
But we talking about the White Sox, aren't there right now.
How about you mentioned Eloy. It makes so much sense to buy that extra year. Whether it's fair or not, we could argue on a different day. I don't think it's fair, but, I mean, this is the way the rule is. And the idea of having Eloy Jimenez in your lineup through 2025, and you don't have to worry about it, it's just too appealing to me, Chuck. And if you do it, if you call him up now, you got to wait longer next year. I think it just makes a lot of sense to wait till April 15th of next year or whatever it is. Is that what they're going to ultimately decide to do?
That certainly is what it feels like. And I want Eloy Jimenez up yesterday. I would love to see him with the White Sox, but from a pure... First off, financial standpoint, yes. You want him up when he's 28 years old in his prime in 2025 for the whole year with the White Sox.
Yep.
Versus you get 6 weeks of him now on this team. You don't want that.
Right.
And I just go back to what the Cubs did with Chris Bryant. They're very similar situations. In fact, Bryant, in 2014, for the whole year, he was the minor league player of the year. He hit 43 homers, 110 RBIs. About 325 and then base percentage of like 440, and the Cubs didn't call him up. They called him up the following April. And when he was in AAA that season, he made 297 plate appearances. You know how many plate appearances Eloy Jimenez has right now in AAA? 170. So there's 120 plate appearances less than what Chris Bryant had in 2014, and the Cubs didn't bring up Bryant. So this just seems to be like that's the path the White Sox are going to take. Not saying they're mimicking them, but it just seems like that would be
smart.
The logical way to go.
Absolutely.
Chuck, this is a question I've asked on your podcast with a couple times, but I'll ask here again if your opinion has changed about Jose Abreu, because I've asked Kampka this same question. When the Sox do turn the corner, do you foresee Abreu still being on the ball club as that Konerko-type veteran as a DH?
Where things are sitting right now, I would think he's going to be a part of this team because of what his value to the team, and he's going to be a free agent. Here's the thing. I don't see them trading him. It just doesn't seem like they're ever going to get the value in return for Abreu. So it feels like he'll be on this team all of next year. And I'm just kind of making some leaps here. He just seems like such a loyal person, loyal player. He feels like the White Sox threw him this lifeline, so to speak, and gave him this amazing opportunity. He chose the White Sox. He wants to win here with this team. That I feel like when he gets to be a free agent, assuming that happens, he's going to want to play here. And whether it's at first base or designated hitter, I just feel like that's he'll be a part of it. Now, is he going to sign some five-year deal? No, he's not. He's going to be, I think he'll be 33 years old at that point, maybe 34. It's a 2 or 3 year deal. That seems like if I'm the Sox and if I'm Abreu, there seems to be that's where you go. But assuming he continues to play. You look at his numbers this year, and two might think, oh, he's on the way down in his career because his numbers aren't what they were before. Look who's playing around him. Imagine what Abreu is going to be like when he has some real talent, like Eloy Jimenez batting in front of him or behind him. His numbers are going to skyrocket.
Yeah.
So I look at this presently, I feel like he'll be here in some fashion through, 2021, 22. That's just what it seems like to me.
Chuck, enjoy tomorrow. Thanks, as always, for the time, buddy.
All right, no problem, guys.
We'll see you soon. That's Chuck Garfine, at Chuck Garfine on Twitter, and you always see him with Bill Melton breaking it down on NBC Sports Chicago.
A lot of questions, and as he talks about, he marks 2020. I think we all are looking at 2020 to see where this ball club is going to be.
Yep.
I want to know who's going to lead it, and if it's going to be Ned Yost. Ned Yost actually is managing the White Sox right now. I just want to know who's going to lead it and how the ball club's going to look,
Hey, Chicago, time's running out on your summer of soccer. Don't miss your chance to see the stars of the MLS live at Toyota Park. Enjoy a midweek matchup on Thursday, August 23rd, as Bastian Schweinsteiger and the Fire take on the Columbus Crew Soccer Club with kickoff at 6 p.m. Visit chicago-fire.com today for tickets to all remaining 2018 home matches. And remember to subscribe to ESPN Plus to catch all local broadcast Fire games and hundreds of international matches. See you at the stadium. We will crosstalk with Tom Waddle next on ESPN 1000.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN Chicago. It's going
down for it. Thanks to our guests today, Jesse Rogers, Kevin Fishbane of the Athletic, Chicago, and Chuck Garfine talking Sox and Kopech and Eloy and Tim Anderson and Abreu and bunch more.
You guys are excited.
We are.
Yeah. White Sox.
Listen, tomorrow night now is must-see TV. And we haven't said that about our beloved White Sox much this year.
The White Sox, yes. Hell yeah.
Did Paulie and Hawk do the game yesterday?
Hawk's only got a couple more, and this is it, right? I mean,
I'm going downstairs. You take over, okay?
You take over. I'm going to check on Paulie. I think that was when Paulie.
What Meller and Sylvie did to me today. We're going to get out of here. Just you take over.
Somebody got hurt. I don't know.
No.
Yeah, you're all by yourself today.
Me and Abdallah and Eric, yeah.
You got a three-man weave.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks to Chris Black. Thank you to Felix Reyes, who's sitting in this week for Danny Zetterman. Zetterman's out on vacation. End of summer, man. Everybody using up the last weeks of the vacation,
Yeah.
Crosstalk brought to you by Low T. Feeling grumpy, tired, or sluggish? Could be low testosterone. Get your levels checked in less than 10 minutes. Go to lowtcenter.com.
Not me, pal. I'll work out
next week, you said.
Most of the summer, though, I've been grinding.
You have been grinding.
I've been grinding.
I saw last night or the night before, did you work with Ryan Hollins?
The Ryan Hollins.
He is such a really good guy. Who just wants to get on the television and fight with
him. Yes, he is Hot Take Hollins.
Yes!
And it's exactly what he is. And he's just like, hey, man, I got a great take for you.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about the Lakers. Yeah. It's going to be off the chain. I said, that's not really how we do things here.
I know.
Hot Take Central.
Such a nice guy, though. Man, when we were in Bristol, we were doing First Take with him. He was a really nice guy, but he had a whole arsenal of
takes. Yeah. Oh, he just takes. So I worked with him Saturday night on the station, right? And so, but the night before he was doing the Big Three because he's in that tournament too, part of the Big Three. So he's playing basketball and doing radio.
Is that right?
Yeah. So
working hard.
Played in the league better in a decade. I mean, he's a true 6'11", 7 footer.
Yeah, he is a trip though. Ryan Hollins is out of his mind.
So he does
that, and then flies home to Los Angeles, and then we did 4.5 hours, I think, on Saturday night, and just like this guy,
a hardworking guy.
Anthony Davis isn't that special.
Oh,
I don't think he's top five. I'm like, man, I Listen, I don't know what you guys do at Bristol. Yeah. I said, I'm not a part of that hot take culture. Because it's a divide for me. It's a divide. Like,
yeah, I know.
We've been given opinions on the radio for years, right? But there's a difference between opinions and just saying, and just trying to get on SportsCenter.
Right,
Like, bro, I'm not trying to get on the bottom line with your nonsense. I said, like, you say what you want, but that's, you do it, you do you. And I'll just go over here and do the reads.
You know what I do? I tell you that this is ESPN 1000 WMVP AM Chicago.
And I tell you that's another fine for the station.
You want to start with...
I want to know, first of all, I know you guys are both such big White Sox fans. I mean, and I know Cap had Rick Hahn on and you guys just got done talking to Chuck. I mean, how excited are you to see this
like
kid
I said,
pitch tomorrow night?
I watch... Hoodie and I both sit down and still watch a lot of White Sox baseball. Yeah. But I can't pretend like there have been many moments this year that you would deem... must see, like appointment television when it comes to the Sox. Tomorrow becomes appointment television if you're a White Sox fan. 7:10 on my couch. I don't care what the kids are doing. I don't care what's going on in the house.
Will you be wearing pants? I mean, is this a pants on or pants off experience?
I will be wearing pants.
When Eloy comes up, pants off.
Then a pants off for sure. Next year, April 15th, April 17th, whatever it is, for sure.
Tax day tomorrow night, pants off.
Just exactly. 7 o'clock. I am watching Michael Kopech. That's it. I mean, this is it. It is very exciting, yes. And he might get shelled, and it doesn't really matter.
No.
But it's about, this is the start of something great, hopefully, and I'm excited that we can watch him tomorrow night.
Why a pitcher's different than an everyday player? Like,
because
Jimenez, you don't want to bring up because you want that extra year of control.
Yes, right? And you don't see it much with pitching. First of all, they get hurt. They have a tendency to get hurt. They might take a team-friendly deal anyway because of the risk they run always and with their longevity. Because of the position they play. Rick Hahn did a good job of explaining the innings thing. You're building you're building that arm up. You're preparing it. You're getting ready. You're building to a certain number of innings year to year.
Right.
And then they want him for the full season next year. He needs to get some big league innings this year. You're not building anything with Eloy Jimenez.
Right.
You're not building an endurance. I mean, he's a position player. You don't see this manipulation as much, if ever, with pitchers. You see it with the great position players all the time.
The other thing, Tom, is that there's transparency with the White Sox. I think that's the difference in which they would tell you, like, you know how Kenny was smooth with it. It's just like, well, we're just going to pare back a little bit. Here's Manny Ramirez. Oh, we're going to pare back a little bit. Here's Jim Thome. Kenny Williams would go through the old Rolodex.
Jr.
He'd go through the old Rolodex of old girlfriends.
Can I sign Robbie Ellemar again?
I've always wanted you.
I'm going to trade for Robbie.
I saw you at that party, but I was too afraid to speak. But now, 20 years later, a little age... you're looking kind of nice to me now. Jim Thome, please come to my ball club. Ken Griffey Jr., you know I've always wanted you. And so that was that administration. At least with this now, it's transparency.
Yeah.
They're paring back. They're trying to go young. And they're trying to do what Houston's done, what the Cubs have done, what Atlanta's doing.
That's right.
You're just trying to go young. And again, it doesn't really matter this year.
Right.
But in 2020, you like to see some dividends. You like to see something good from this White Sox team.
Do you think in any way, shape, or form it's also a product of Giolito hasn't produced, Moncada has not been as good as everyone had hoped?
And it's a little depressing. I know what you mean.
You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe, look, we sold you on this rebuild, which is still totally intact.
Right.
But now you need a little bit of a bump because the guys we were hoping to provide some of that didn't really do it.
Can you identify the guys that's going to be with the ball? As I mentioned, like, half this roster won't be there when the team's good. Like, Moncada needs glasses, clearly. Am I wrong about that or not?
You might be right.
That guy's hitting .217 at the top of the lineup, 0-for-4, and he looks like he has no idea. It's like me up there, for God's sakes.
And it's weird because he got off to a reasonably good start.
I mean, Tim Anderson gives you some pop, but he's a .300 on base percentage guy.
.289.
Yeah, you've got so many, wild swinging bats.
You can't get on base,
bats.
You can't win. I'm sorry. You just can't. No amount of pitching in the world, and they've always been a pitching organization, no amount of pitching in the world is going to help you if you can't get guys on base, if you can't score runs.
Can't develop.
Sorry.
Also, you can't develop players when you're bunting and sacrificing.
Yeah, that's true.
I heard you guys, Tom, come on now.
What the hell is that?
Yes, that was the old Sparky Anderson would throw a bunt down every now and again.
Well, that was
30 years ago.
Exactly. That was 30 freaking years ago.
I mean, come on.
I thought Jonathan, the best point was At this point, don't you want to see your guys hit?
Please.
Yes. I mean, really, what are you advancing a guy at base for? So you can win 64 games this year? Yeah. I mean.
And then Ricky falls back on, we're trying to teach him to play the right way. That's not the right way.
No, that's not the right way.
Sacrifice bunting is not the right way.
And that's why when the team gets good, you got to find out who the next manager is. I'm just telling you. Now, I'm not trying to push Ricky out the door, but I'm kind of trying to push Ricky out the door. I'm just saying, like, you're bunting a sacrifice. Uh-oh, here we go. Here comes Nicky.
Here comes Lou.
A bunt sacrifice.